Welcome, everyone, on this soon-to-be even hotter day.
大家早上好，很欢迎大家来参加今天的讲座。今天而且特别热，所以很感谢大家。
Okay, today I'm going to be talking about fear and anger. I trust that all of you have had fear and anger sometime in your life. It's not going to be too foreign and too out of the ordinary.
今天我讲座的话题呢是恐惧和愤怒，我想大家多多少少都会有这样的经历，所以这个话题或许对你们也不会太陌生。
And since I'm going to be talking about fear and anger, there might be a general expectation that I'll be talking about ways of overcoming, dealing with it, eliminating these negative emotions. And I will be getting to that in the latter part of the talk, but I'm more going to be addressing how we can actually analyze and look at these emotions in and of themselves.
说起恐惧和愤怒呢，我想大家今天一定是期待着我会向大家介绍如何能够克服恐惧和愤怒这些情绪。但是在我的讲座后面会谈到如何克服，不过一开始呢，我会先分析一下恐惧和愤怒到底是什么。
So central to my talk will be a recognition that in practice,Some things seem to be fairly identifiable, like strong emotions of fear, anger, hatred, pleasure, happiness. All of these we can perceive fairly easily. But there are other things, which of course we're concerned with in Chan, which is the mechanics of the mind, what's actually going on in the deepest levels of perception and consciousness.And also emptiness, something I'll talk about a little bit later, but these are very important aspects of practice, but they're not always so readily perceivable and understandable.
我这次讲座的一个中心的话题呢，就是说如何能够在现实生活当中能够认识到一些情绪，有些情绪是比较容易认识到的，比如说一些很强烈的情绪，例如恐惧啊、仇恨啊、愤怒啊、喜悦啊、开心啊，这些情绪是比较强烈的，所以很容易认识到。但有些事情是不是那么很快就可以认识到的，比如说我们的心是怎么工作的，空性、空这个道理又是怎么运作的。它是怎样跟人的情绪发生作用，这些东西就不是那么容易来认识它。
So as practitioners, on a superficial level at least, and by that I mean a level where we're not really thinking about how we act, we don't necessarily like the idea of owning up to strong emotions. We like to remain, or think we remainequanimous, balanced, detached, not caught up, and especially in what's negative, greed, hatred, ignorance, anger. There's a certain tendency we have to look past them, almost pretend that they don't exist, rather than to examine them and see what we don't like about ourselves. Even though the whole thrust of practice is to examine ourselves totally,as Dogen said, to study Buddha Dharma is to become intimate with the self, to really look at every aspect of who we are and how we are. But we understand that this intimacy that he's talking about is something that's not that easy to achieve.
作为一个修行者，从比较表层的修行来看呢，我说所谓的表层就是说，在一个比较浅的层次来看，我们不太喜欢承认自己有这些强烈的情绪，也不喜欢拥有这些强烈的情绪。我们更喜欢的是维持一种平静超然，不纠结于这些情绪的一种状态，特别是那种负面的情绪，比如说贪婪、仇恨啊、恐惧啊、愤怒啊，我们很讨厌这些情绪，而且我们有一种倾向性想要去除掉这些情绪或者超越它，而不是 正视这些情绪，清清楚楚来检验这些情绪。就比如说日本的道元禅师曾经说过，他说学佛法，学习佛法其实就是要跟自我有一种比较亲密的认识。他所谓的自我亲密认识，就是说要认识到自我，能够检验自我。
As many of you know, in the liturgy, before we have a meal, there are the five contemplations. So one of the things that we chant is protecting the mind from mistakes is essential, and we must abandon greed, hatred, and ignorance. So we really don't want to have anything to do with these three poisons, if you sort of get the sense of what the liturgy is saying. We want to just abandon them, just move to some place where they're not. And we just want to spit these poisons out, really. And of course, there is a teaching of non-attachment, where the mind is in perfect equanimity and not dwelling on what the content of the mind is. When things come up, we just, we're supposed to, as we understand it, let them go. And, but it's not so easy to accomplish. But using other techniques, and methods, we can learn how to transform some of these negative emotions. We don't have to turn away from them, and that's going to be one of the themes of my talk. So there's a very good story that illustrates this. There was a great Thai master named Ajahn Chah. And one time he was giving a talk, and someone approached him and said, very rudely, you would think, and they looked at him and said, you know, you really are a very angry and jealous person. Now, it's quite something to say to a great master. And imagine what he might have said. But all he said is, that may be so, but I make no use of it. Right? So he didn't disavow these emotions, but they were no longer operative, no longer a source of vexation to him.
比如说我们在五供前会唱的一个偈子《十存五观》当中有这么一句话说，防心离过贪等为宗。所以从当中我们可以看出来，我们一般遇到贪嗔痴这些烦恼的时候，我们是想要去去除它，而也并不是真的想要面对它、检验它，而是虽然当中也会提到不执着，佛法当中不执着、放下之类的智慧来处理这些烦恼贪嗔痴，但是更多的我们还是想把它去除，而不是面对它，然后转换它。所以这将会成为我今天的一个主要的话题，就是如何转化这些情绪。比如说泰国的法师阿姜查，著名的禅师阿姜查曾经就被一个人这样问到，他说你真是一个你有愤怒又有嫉妒心的人。当然这个人对阿姜查禅师这么说是非常的不礼貌，特别是阿姜查是一个很有名的禅师。但是阿姜查却回答，他的回答却说，他说或许是这样吧，或许你说的是有道理，但是呢我并不会继续在这些贪嗔痴上进行运作，就是说我不会去管这些东西，我不会受这些的影响。这就是他阿姜查的一个故事。
Okay, so a very famous American president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, affectionately known as FDR, said a very famous phrase, a lot of Americans know this, which is, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And in one sense, he identified the problem, right? But of course, we can then become afraid of becoming afraid. And we really want to see these things at the source so we can understand them and not get caught up in them.
又比如美国的著名总统罗斯福总统曾经说过一句话，他说我们真正唯一需要感到恐惧的其实就是恐惧本身。所以我们不是一定要感到恐惧的，我们应该是可以真正的寻找恐惧的根源而去面对它。
So in Chan, we seek root causes, and we seek to look at the essential nature of the mind and how it works. We know that all of these negative emotions I've mentioned, fear, anger, hatred, they're not essential to who we are, to our true minds, yet try as we might, time and time again, these things come up. And so just the way that you can look at a house and say, all right, well, the house is made out of nails and wood and stone, or you can see a storm approaching and you can know, study a little meteorology, that the storm is comprised of temperature and moisture and wind, and various factors have to come together, dependent origination, things, one thing leaning and following another, and then you have a storm, and that's really what happens in any kind of emotion. It builds from various subtle aspects of the mind.
在禅的修行当中呢，我们一般都要寻找根源和心的本质，所以我们知道这些负面的情绪，它对于我是谁或者心的本质而言，并不是最关键的部分，不是最至关重要的。但是我们还是需要去认识到它，特别是当它如何起来，特别是它如何起来，如何对我们造成困扰的这一部分，就好像一个房子，它是由木头啊、砖头啊、一些钉子组成的一样，或者是又像一个暴风雨要形成的过程，它有风有雨水，然后聚集在一起这样一个组成过程。我们的情绪也是这样，它也是一点一滴由一些微小的部分慢慢产生变大的。
But the way that we perceive them, these negative emotions are often formidable, really difficult to deal with. And indeed, in the Heart Sutra, it states bodhisattvas relying on prajnaparamita, right, which is the wisdom beyond wisdom, have no fear in their minds, and departing far in confusion and imagining, they reach ultimate nirvana. So the last barrier to enlightenment is fear, as the sutra says. And it's the last stronghold, and it's not easily brought down, not easily conquered.
但是这些负面的情绪乍一看却感觉就非常强大，好像难以克服。就像比如说《心经》当中说到，他说《心经》中有一句说到：“菩提萨陀以般若波罗蜜多故，心无挂碍，无挂碍故，无有恐怖，远离颠倒梦想，究竟涅槃。”可见最后一道通向开悟最后一道强有力的壁垒就是恐怖心。
So if we continue to investigate negative emotions in the spirit of Chan, we note that at the subtlest level, our normal way of perceiving the world is a deluded view. It's to perceive the world dualistically, and that means that I see myself as being over here, I see everything outside of me as separate, permanent, not dependent on anything, and has nothing to do with me. This is a very normal way that we ordinary sentient beings perceive the world. Whereas in the Chan view and enlightened view, there is non-dualism, where we see and experience the connections between everyone. We don't see, we're not caught up in this separation.
如果我们继续来深一步探索负面情绪，用禅的方法来探索这些负面情绪的话，你会发现我们一般观察世界感体验这个世界的方式就是颠倒的，是一种妄想心。比如说我们在看这个世界的时候都是二元的，我感觉我在这里做讲座，我是我，然后大家是大家，这是一个二元对立的一个情况并不觉得有什么关系。而我们知道真正的佛法妄心真心告诉我们其实这个世界应该它不是一个二元对立的世界所有的现象都应该在相互关系当中。
So, a famous French writer named Anais Nin said, "We don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. So we actually react to what and how our mind perceives the world, and then we make conclusions not on what's actually going on, but on our perception of what's going on and what we have manufactured. And that prospect alone is a little frightening if you think about it, that we are kind of lost in our own thoughts.
比如说一位法国的著名作家阿内斯尼恩曾经说，他说我们并没有如实的看到事情的本身，我们看到的所有的事情其实都是我们自己。他的意思就是说，我们实际上我们在观察世界的时候，或者在做出一种评论，在做出一种判断的时候，我们没有按照事物真正发生的如实发生的情况在做判断，而是我们自己在妄想当中创造出来的，或者是捏造出来、编造出来的。因为我们每个人都是透过自己的偏见在看这个世界，所以如果了解这一点的话，可能这一点本身就已足以让我们感到恐惧了，而且特别是我们迷失在这样的一种无明当中。
So in the Platform Sutra, Huineng, the sixth patriarch, there's a very famous story I think many people know. We saw two monks arguing over whether a flag at the monastery was moving in and of itself or it was moving because of the wind. It's not actually explained the nature of their argument, but that they were arguing something about how this flag was moving. And Huineng overheard the conversation, approached both monks, and in a sense scolded them, saying they were both wrong. It's not the flag moving, it's not the wind moving, it's your mind that's moving. And this means that the mind was dwelling, as I said, on self-generated perceptions and concepts. Concepts like flag, wind, moving, me, you, all of these concepts are things that Huineng saw were stuck in the monks' minds. And it doesn't mean that things don't exist, it just means that we relate to them in a particular way and we're not aware of it.
比如说在六祖坛经当中有一个故事，是慧能大师看到有两个和尚在争论到底是幡动还是风动，然后慧能大师就告诉他们两个，其实他们两个都错了，应该是他们自己的心在动啊，即仁者心动，不是风动，不是幡动，仁者心动。然后这个意思就是说，慧能大师指出，两位和尚他的错误之处在于他们过于纠结于一些概念，比如说是风的概念啊，幡的概念，以及这些概念在他们自己内心所产生的一些妄想。
When we talk about the mind moving, it is very easy to say, right? But it's an exceedingly profound concept or reality in Chan, and it's something that if all of us really understood, if I could say mind moving and you knew exactly what that meant and you saw what your mind was doing, well, we could end this Dharma talk right now, right? You'd get it. That's it. So that's one of the interesting things in talking about the Dharma. There's certain things that you can say. It's, you know, the phrase easier said than done certainly applies to this.
当然我们说到心动，说起来很简单，但是体会起来却非常难。如果大家能够体会什么是心动，你很清楚自己的心是怎么动的话，那么我们今天讲座都可以立刻结束了。
So it's this tendency of the mind to move, to grasp after or reject things and ideas that we ourselves have constructed that is the principal source of our emotions. Sung San in Faith and Mind says that perfecting the way is not difficult if only we don't pick and choose. Picking and choosing is what the mind does when it moves in duality. It's those are identical concepts, picking and choosing and the mind moving.
其实说到我们心有这种动的倾向性，也就是说心会不停地抓取或者拒绝 或者不，它根据我们的喜好，就是我们的心根据我们的喜好，不停的在抓取或者讨厌、拒绝，这个就是造成我们情绪的最根本的来源。就像三祖孙灿大师在《信心铭》当中说到的，他说大道至简，危险拣择，这个挑选拣择就是就是说我们的心是处在一个二元对立的状态。
So let's not forget, though, that in evolution, in our evolution, emotions, a moving mind, were very helpful, right? In a hostile world fraught with danger, emotional responses protected the organism, us, from harm and brought us towards things that seemed to be advantageous. We couldn't intellectualize a charging tiger. Oh, there's a tiger coming at me. It's just in my mind, you know.That's the end of me. You just couldn't do that. And so even today, emotions that we have, you can say that they're manufactured by the mind, but it's kind of the lingua franca of the world. It's how people react to one another. So they really have to be taken seriously because it's how individuals relate to each other, groups relate to each other, and even whole countries have emotional responses towards various events.So we can't dismiss these illusions, but we can try not to be so caught up in them.
但是呢，说到这里，我们也要特别强调注意一下，就是说，并不是说心动心的这个移动并不是什么不好的地方，因为在我们人类的进化当中，情绪啊或者一个二元对立的心的动啊心动啊都是对我们人类的进化是非常有帮助的。比如说在一个恶劣的环境当中，如果有危险啊这些情绪的产生会帮助我们保护我们帮助我们不受外来灾难和迫害。比如说有一个老虎在冲向我们的过程当中，我们都会有些本能的反应，我们不可能停下来理论上想一想，哦，这个老虎其实上是我自己的心所产生的一个妄念而已。如果我们的本能反应就是跑，如果不跑的话可能就被老虎咬死了。所以说即便在今天的社会，人类的这些情绪，这些基于心动所产生的情绪还是有它自己的功用，它自己的作用的。所以我们还是必须要认真对待，而不能完全的消极否定它，因为这样的话你就不能与人交往，与这个世界进行交往了。
This analysis that the mind perceives misperceives at the deepest level may be true, but just as I stated before, just we're mostly unaware of it. So there was an Indian poet, Rabindranath Tagore. So he said that people think of themselves as a mirror, that they're seeing the world just as it is. And this is really interesting, because anyone who's studied Chan, Zen, for any time knows that the metaphor of a mirror is used all the time. And it's used in a very different way. So I'm just going to slight digression on mirrors here, which is interesting. In the early sutras, the mirror is used as a symbol of vanity. You know, I look at myself in the mirror, I'm so handsome, so wonderful. And so I'm just using this as a way of inflating my own ego. Now, Tagore is saying that we think of ourselves as mirror because we look at the world and we say, oh, well, there's some pillows over there, there are people out here, there's a desk here, there's some coffee there. This is all quite real. I'm seeing reality. I'm not aware that I'm seeing it through my own prejudices, my own concerns, right? But then the Zen view of a mirror, as in precious mirror samadhi, is the true mind as a mirror. Then you're seeing the world unfiltered by the self, right? And in a sense, that's the crux of my talk. We have, as we try to learn about ourselves in practice, we really need both these kind of images of the mirror, right? We're really trying to see how our true mind works. We're not trying to get caught up in things, but we also recognize that we are ordinary people and we are looking at things in a dualistic way. So we have to work, you know, both sides of the fence, so to speak.
Mm. Is it Indian poet?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. 有一个著名的印度诗人曾经说到，他说镜子，他把人，我们来感受经历世界比作为镜子，他认为，我们看到的东西，我们听到的东西，一切都那么真实，所以他把我们自己作为一面镜子。当然，他这里的镜子是，他没有意识到，也就是像一般人一样意识不到，这个镜子其实并不是真的是如实的反映外在世界，而是通过自己的经验感受，主观的经验感受去体验这个世界的。就像早期的，这个提到镜子很有意思的是，在早期的佛教著作当中，一般镜子会用来比作虚荣心，因为比如说经常爱照镜子的人，可能虚荣心会比较大一点，自我的意识比较强一点。但是发展到后期，像禅宗时候提到镜子，用镜子来做比喻的时候，比如《宝镜三昧论》当中提到的镜子，就是指真心。我们的真心像一面镜子，能够如实的，才能真正如实的映照出这个世界，是没有我执的。所以，这里的镜子，其实我觉得我们两种镜子都是需要的，两种镜子当中所反映的影像都需要，一种是。以真心的镜子来映照出真实的世界，而还有一种镜子是我们凡夫这样子，用我们自己的主观感受来映照出的，其实是有偏差的这样一种世界。
Okay, since I've been talking about the true mind and non-duality, of course, what we're really talking about is emptiness, and no Dharma talk would be complete without some talk of emptiness. We really can't get our fill of emptiness. What emptiness is, and it's always good to go over this, is an understanding and an experience for the enlightened, right, of the world as it actually is. This is the precious mirror samadhi, really reflecting reality. Were we firmly grounded in this reality, if we really saw things in that way, we would be viewing the world non-dualistically. We'd not be fooled by appearances of things, somebody says they're a Republican or a Democrat or a conservative or they like a particular type of music. We wouldn't react to that person as being an embodiment of what they just mentioned to us, right? We would be able to see beyond it. So in the state of emptiness, our views and ideas that we normally have no longer have the hold on us that they normally do. They're no longer operative. Because we normally see things as being permanent, that there's an abiding self nature to us and the things in the world, and that everything is unconnected to everything else. Of course, in this view of emptiness, we always have to remember that things really do exist, but not in the substantial way that we perceive them. We understand that change, impermanence, is central to this. And also, if we contemplate change a little more, we see that the world really couldn't exist as we believe it exists if things weren't changing all the time. Mm.
一般禅宗讲座都会讲到空性，那么这里呢，空性的意思我简单的介绍一下，简单讲一下，就是说作为一个开悟的人，以开悟的人去体验和理解这个世界，他能够清楚的了悟空性，因为这从他的角度来看，这个世界它是没有二元对立的，而他也不会被现象现象的表象所迷惑，而因为他的观点，他不会在受困于这些观点，这些贪嗔痴也不在运作当中，而一般凡夫所见的这个世界，他会认为一切都是稳定，一切都是恒常不变的，而且有一个常住的自我，一个我执在那边， 然后在看这个世界的时候，我们也是根据我们自己的角度来看这个世界。而如果从空性的角度呢，它就不会从我执这个角度来看这个世界。而所以凡夫看世界都是觉得现象是孤立存在的，都是以我需求为存在的。
So we may not be able to perceive the deepest workings of the mind that easily, but there's much that we can perceive in the world, and that gives us clues about how our mind is really working. And what I'll be doing in a moment is going through an exercise developed by a Western psychologist, which reveals some of the tendencies of the mind. Remember, I was talking about biases, prejudices,views that we have that we're really not aware of. So there was an English psychologist by the name of Peter Wason who coined this term confirmation bias. And it's a fancy term, and what it really means is wishful thinking. And it's this tendency to search for, interpret, favor, recall information in a way that confirms one'sbeliefs or hypotheses. There's a famous saying by a former politician, statesman in the United States named Adlai Stevenson, who said, this is the conclusion upon which I'll base my facts, right? As opposed to these are the facts that I'm going to base my conclusion on, it's just the opposite. And that's often the way that we work.
当然心到底是怎么工作的不是很容易直接的就能觉察到的。待会儿呢我会用一个西方心理学的小实验来向大家显示。那么西方心理学呢已经经常在研究意识啊潜意识啊和心理运作方式啊。然后有一个英国的心理学家叫彼得沃森提出了一个理论叫确认偏差理论。在60年代的时候提出这个理论，其实确认偏差这个学术的名词的意思就是说，我们每个人都有一种倾向，都会有自我的倾向性，想要去寻求解释或者偏好一些根据自己的喜好，根据自己的信仰啊偏见啊。这种以这种倾向性去寻找些信息或者解释信息或者偏好一些信息。有一个前著名政客曾经说到，他说我是先有结论然后再去寻找支持这个结论的论据和事实的。
So there's another a geneticist actually, another scientist named David Perkins, who coined a very similar term called my side bias. AndWhat I really like about that is that could have been something that you'd find in the sutras, because that's pretty much a definition of ignorance, wu ming or avijja in Sanskrit. In other words, that I see things only from my side, and I think that everything else has its side. You know, as we say, when we talk about emptiness, we say things don't exist from their own side, right? They things exist in the way... that we perceive them, right? I mean, they have a certain existence, right? It's not like they're just, we manufactured them out of our minds, but the way we perceive them is a my side bias.
比如著名的遗传学家戴维·帕金斯曾经提出过一个自我偏差理论。这个自我偏差理论非常有意思，因为在我看来它几乎就是佛教当中无明的一个定义。就是说我们看待任何事物任何现象都是从自我这个角度来看待的。
So this idea of my side bias, right, this is the heart of wrong view. And as Guoxing Fashi says, you know, we take the world as ourselves.
当然这个自我偏差理论当中这种自我偏差就是一种错误的观念，就是一种妄念。他就像国行法师经常说的，我们把这个世界看成是自己。
So about 2 weeks ago in the New York Times there was an article about what I was talking about, confirmation bias, this tendency of the mind, and there was a quiz to to show how it works. So I'm going to share that or impose that on you. So anyway, so here, I'm holding up a sheet. Everyone can see this? See what's written on it? Now, the thing about this quiz, right, is you're supposed to figure out the underlying principle, right? How I'm changing this a little bit from what the Times did, as you'll see, but I'm not even saying what's written there, but everybody recognizes this, right? So there was some formula, some underlying principle that allowed what we know are numbers to be written. So just wondering if anybody has any idea what might also how you can find. Now the key is to see, this is sort of a trick. It's not necessarily getting the right answer or the wrong answer. The idea is to figure out what the principle is.
Mm-hmm. 就几周前我在纽约时报看到一篇文章，它也是谈到这个确认偏差理论。他还做了一个小实验，今天我也在这里向大家展示一下。比如说我刚刚手上举了一个字条，上面写了三个数字。这个小实验的问题就是说，你看这三个数字它有什么内在规律。
So I don't know if anyone feels like volunteering something that would seem to do what this does. I'll write down the numbers. Anyone want to sort of volunteer? Sure. So you said what was the number? What
the number and the repetition.
All right, so what would be another example? Not the same thing.
The shadow of the other. The two, the shadow makes four.
Well, I know, but so give me another example, not what's here. Give me another example that you think shows what's the underlying principle of how these numbers are written down.
I don't know.
有没有人想真
1, 2, 4. Okay, all right, so let's just...
所以有人说是一二。
All right. So we have. All right. I wrote it really small. 1, 2, 4. All right. Now the question is, let me tell you that yes, that's true. But the question is, what is the underlying principle? That's the thing.
有人回答说是一二四，那么我想问的还是到底它的内在规律是什么？如果让你给一个新的例子，你为什么会给出这个数字，这三个数字？
Well, but 1, 2, 4. I mean, what's the underlying principle? Okay, right. That's what, you know, 99% of us would think, right? And it's what you assume, but you don't. All right, so let's just test this out. How about
一种内在规律的可能性就是说它是后一个数字是前一个数字的翻一个倍，是这样一个自然规律。
How about this? Does this work for the underlying principle?
那么这个是这三个数字呢？你们觉得这三个数字符合
9, 4, 1.
内在规律吗？我们在说的规律吗？
What do you think? Yes?
2 times 2 and 1 times 1.
Wow. we got a mathematician. Well, that's brilliant. I couldn't, but it's not this. First of all, this is going in a descending order, right? And this isn't I didn't make this. It's not the you figured out the underlying principle of this example, which I think is amazing. But that's not the necessarily the principle. Well, let me give you something else here. Just
刚刚我说的刚有我举了一个新的三个数字是九四一，然后有人说它的规律是三乘三，二乘二，一乘一，然后。我觉得非常有意思。当然这个最明显的规律就是说它的数字是递减的。接下来我再给你显示一组图案或者数字。
All right, now, here's another thing. 1, 2, 3. How about this? What do you think? Is this, is this, uh, Does this work for our underlying principle?
我现在把一二三拿出来，这个一二三三个数字符合规律吗？
That's good. That's very good. Great. Although that's not. Let me tell you what the I haven't let the cat out of the bag quite yet, but I will. According to the way this was, and you can look this up. It's about 2 weeks ago in the Times. The underlying principle is that each number has to be greater than the one before it. That's it. Very so simple. No one would think of that. That's the underlying principle. So if you were to come up with this and realize that this does not match the underlying principle, you're still right in the sense that you're getting closer to what the underlying principle is. So it's not whether you write something here that is right or wrong. The thing, the quest is for the principle underlying it.
刚有人回答说，哦，这些所有的牌子当中的规律就是说，所有的数字下面都有一个下划线，都有一个重点线。然后当然，这也是一个很好的答案。不过从《纽约日报》当中，它的答案是说，它的规律其实就是说，数字都是逐渐递增的，就后面数字大于前面的数字。当然，如果按照这个规律的话，刚刚我举的牌941好像不符合这个规律，好像是错误的。但是实际上呢，它也不能说它是错误的，应该说它是也是更接近于真相的一个牌子。
So who said it had to be numbers, right?
当然也不一定是数字，比如现在就是三个图形。
Right? I just shapes, right? Now we're definitely moving away from the New York Times. Now if I hold up, let's say.As you just said, I've got three underlines here, right? Now, I've really, you know, this is a bait and switch game. I've just changed the rules on everybody. So what's the underlying principle? Maybe this is it. Just three lines, right?
就像刚刚有人，我现在显示的，前面显示的是三个图像，三角形、正方形和五角形。接下来我又显示了一张牌，那么就像刚刚有人回答的，可能它的内在规律不过就是三个下划线，所以当我举出这个空的三个下划线，可能就是内在就已经符合内在规律。
And now, a blank piece of paper. Is this what's the underlying principle?、Right?
那现在我举的是一张白纸，那么请问这又是什么内在规律呢？它的规律又是什么？
Well, maybe the underlying principle. Oh, I'm sorry, please. Empty. Well, you're way ahead of me, right? Yes, right. So the empty, yeah. Maybe, well, I haven't even quite got it, but you're absolutely on target. It's like maybe just lifting my hand up is the underlying principle, since I've done that in every one. And now, as you just said, now I'm going to hold up nothing. As a matter of fact, I'm not even raising my arm.I'm just suggesting what the underlying principle is. And when there's nothing to rely on, right, absolutely nothing, well, then we're at wu, right? We're at emptiness. We're at the world of silent illumination. Nothing, there is absolutely no principle, nothing, nothing conceptual, no language that I'm now presenting. And I'm asking...What is the underlying principle? And in a sense, that's a lot of the way that Chan practice works. Of course, you can't just do this in a few minutes, but if you ever sit and practice a Wato, asking what is Wu, understanding that Wu doesn't have any meaning, yet you're asking for it, you are seeking an underlying principle.And of course, if we're really talking about emptiness, even underlying principle is too much of a concept, right? This is a point where we go to no words at all. This is why the famous Chan Master Gute, I think, just whenever he was asked a question, he would just raise his finger like that. So that's the underlying principle.
那么刚刚我举了一张空白的纸，就是白纸举出来的时候，有人，那么我在问内在规律是什么？那么有人说，有人回答内在规律可能是空性，所有的空或者就是空性。当然你的他的回答已经超前了很多了啊，的确，最终影像的这个实验最终指出的规律有很多种可能性，有可能是说每次我的手都会举起来，也算是一种规律。那么到后来我可能连手都不举了，我就这样问内在规律是什么。那么这些这样做法就越来越接近于禅宗修行当中的方法，比如话头啊、默照啊，就比如好比我们是在问什么是无啊，无这个字本身是没有概念的，那么我们好像就在问这个内在规律是什么。我们在问内在规律是什么，就像我们在问话头一样，就像最后我都不举手，也不用文字了，但是你还是有一种寻找在里边。就像禅宗的有一位禅师当人家问他什么是无什么真性的时候，他就举起一根手指头，却什么也不说。
So each time I ask this question, I draw you in a little bit, right? So there'smaybe if I hadn't mentioned this, your minds wouldn't have gotten focused in quite the way that they did. But I've, in introducing the question, if you think about it, you'd look for some little secret trick or something that might reveal the answer. And I'm telling you, there really isn't an answer. But getting back to the article on confirmation bias and what it was about,was that in dealing with the numbers, it pointed out that somebody who looked at it, the first it was 248, almost everybody thinks that it's a double, right? And everyone reacts that way. Very few people would say 941, you know, mixing even numbers and odd numbers. Why? Because people don't want to be wrong. That's really the point of this article. And the relevance of this really expands greatly. It's in terms of wishful thinking. So I buy a lottery ticket. Oh, I'm going to be a millionaire. Oh, I lost a lot. I'm going to buy one tomorrow. I'm going to be a millionaire. Oh, look, I'm going to buy a yacht and I'm going to go sailing around the world. Oh,I wasn't even close. Then I buy another lottery ticket and another lottery ticket. I always have this feeling in my mind that something is going to happen according to the way that I want it to happen. And this tendency, the article in the Times went on to say, has to do with interpersonal relations, trying to get people to change. It has to do with politics and policies between countries. It's an embedded kind of tendency in the mind to look at things from our own point of view. And the purpose of this exercise is really to show you that, yes, we see these things in deep, deep meditation, but they also are operative every day in very ordinary circumstances.
就像我们刚刚玩了这个小游戏之后，最后大家都知道其实是没有正确答案的，它是没有答案的。回到纽约时报的这篇文章，它实际上想讨论的话题就是确认偏差这个理论。它就说大部分的人看到248这个三个数字之后会想到的规律是数字是就是说翻倍，就是后面的数字翻前面的倍，就是自己翻倍。为什么会这么回答？就是说大部分人都是不希望出错的，他总是希望寻找一个正确答案。但这种相关性的理论在生活的方方面面都有体现。比如说有人去买彩票，他就会立刻联想到百万富翁，成为百万富翁之后可以买游艇啊，过上奢华的生活呀，所以就买彩票这一个举动就会让他联想到这么多东西。就是人他的文章的意义就在于人们的行动啊，看到的一些现象都是会联系到按照自己的如意算盘那样去联系。这个理论呢 不仅仅适用在买彩票，也适用在制定政策啊，以及政客之间的互动啊，都是按照这一规律在进行。
So one of the things I want to show is this, the tendency of the mind, to misperceive is something that is of course is what Buddha Dharma is about, but it exists in the Western world in science and literature. And I'm going to give some more examples of this just to show how this kind of understanding is very accessible and in ways that we can really perceive just in everyday contemplation. Right? So there was a 17th century French philosopher named Blaise Pascal, and he said, the heart has its reasons of which reason knows nothing.
像我刚刚我说到的这些，我也想在西方的科学文学当中举例，来显示一般大家都会知道存在确认偏差。比如说法莱兹帕斯卡曾经说过这样一句话，他说，我们的心有其理性所无法理解的理由在。
So another quote, the Argentinian poet Jorge Luis Borges wrote that, and this was a quote, he's really talking about being a writer, but he's talking about trying to understand the world, trying to understand what's out there, which is really what we're trying to do, trying to understand the world, trying to understand ourselves. So he wrote, a man sets himself the task of portraying the world. Through the years, he peoples a space with images of provinces, kingdoms, mountains, bays, ships, islands, fishes, rooms, instruments, stars, horses, and people. Shortly before his death, he discovers that the patient labyrinth of lines traces the image of his own face. So, in effect, he's noting that we're locked in as prisoners of our own perceptions.
就像有一位阿根廷作家海尔斯·路易斯·博尔赫斯曾经在写到过在如何认识世界、认识自己的过程当中，他说到，人类担负起想要描绘这个世界的这样一个重任，然后经过很多年呢，他会创造出各种的影像，比如说城市啊、国王、王国啊、山川啊、海湾啊、船啊、帆啊、岛屿啊、鱼啊、房子呀、马、人啊，各种各样的创造各种各样的影像出来。但是很快呢，在他临死之前呢，他就意识到，他又看到了其他各种的迷宫一样的线在他面前穿梭。所以他想描绘的就是说，我们就像一个是被锁在自己的感受世界或觉受世界的一个囚徒一样。
Just a couple more examples. There was some engineers, a whole group of engineers were interviewed and asked about where they saw themselves in their profession. And they found out that almost 40% of these engineers think that they're in the top 5% of their profession. So it's impossible. Right, but once again, living in their own minds.
比如说，再举一个例子啊，大家是怎么活在自己的世界？有一个调查，对美国工程师调查说，调查显示说，有30%-40%的工程师都认为他们认为自己是最前的5%最顶尖的，他在他们行业中是最顶尖 top 最顶尖的。5%的精英人才，当然这是不可能的，因为有30%-40%的人都这么认为自己是在行业中是前5%的人。
Okay, and lastly, there another study of people marrying one another. This is in the West, and there is a statistically biased example of people with the same last name marrying other people with the same last name. So.Joneses marrying Joneses, Smiths marrying Smiths. I don't know how this plays out in China, right? Because there are 100 names in Chinese. But once again, various things going on in the mind which are operative, which we're not so aware of.
还有一个例子是在在西方世界当中，很多人会潜意识的就会倾向于和另一跟自己另一个同性的人结婚，比如说叫姓史密斯的人容易更倾向于跟史密斯的人结婚，叫琼斯的人更容易跟姓琼斯的人结婚，这种在统计学和数据上来说是超过了一般数据的可能性的我不知道这个在中国文化当中是怎么样的，因为中国可能有几百个姓氏。
Okay, so hopefully I've convinced you that we have somewhat deluded minds. We're not always always working in reality. There are parts of ourselves that we don't know about. So now if you crank up the volume of this tendency of the mind, and you can start to see how stronger emotions, remember the talk is really about fear and anger, how those can arise from all of these little delusions that we have. They're sort of the building blocks of how we start to build a sense of ego and how we can then feel that we're threatened, or we can see other people or events as dangers to ourselves.
希望到这里为止呢，我已经举了这么多例子能够让你确信我们的心其实是一种以妄念的方式在运作，而这些一点一滴的颠倒妄想，这些妄心组成了能让我们所感到的那么实在的自我的感受，然后再有自我的感受呢再进一步发展出来，受到威胁的时候会产生恐惧啊、愤怒啊等负面情绪。
So at the center of who we are, there's this sort of self-aware organism. And when I use self-aware, I mean in the ordinary sense of self, that we have a sense of self. And there is a sense that we feel quite alone and separate. I remember reading somewhere that one of the worst human emotions is loneliness, one of the most unhappy emotions. And so we're viewing danger or opportunity according to these criteria of like what makes us feel good or feel bad. Now, the essential mind, which is what Chan and Zen is all about in one sense, and of course the ending of suffering, is to see that we're not really separate from these emotions. We just the way that we're viewing the world has somehow gotten twisted, and the metaphor that's often used is that our minds are like a jug that's got water in it but lots of pebbles and dirt, and all of the difficulties of our lives as the day goes by shakes us up, so the water becomes cloudy. That's what our mind is like. And meditation and contemplation and following the precepts, giving us a moral stability, is what will let all of the debris, these emotions and things, settle so that we can see more clearly into the mind.
在刚我们说到这些妄心啊，颠倒妄想的中心，一个中心的核心就是说，一种自我意识啊，这种自我意识让我们感觉到自己是非常孤立的，而且经常会感到孤独。而从佛教当中讲的，佛法当中讲的真心而言呢，其实我们跟这个世界并不是分割开来的。经常会用的一个例子就是说，就好比一杯水啊，这个水里边充满了泥土、小石头。当我们在搅动这杯水的时候呢，它在不停的搅动当中，水和泥土啊、石头都会混合在一起，就会变得越来越浑浊。然后你就在这样的浑浊当中就失去了它的清晰度。然后如果我们想要这个水重新回到清澈呢，我们就必须要使用像打坐呀、守戒呀、自省反省啊之类的方法，能够让这些泥土小石子慢慢沉淀下来，才能够重新运用清澈的智慧来看到这个世界。
So when we sense a threat and believe that there's nothing we can do about it, then there is fear. When we sense there is something we can do about it, then there's anger. Hatred is perhaps the raw perception of difference and wanting that difference to end. It's the fuel of anger. And of course, pleasant sensations, though less threatening, have their own consequences in clinging and reinforcing the false sense of self that feels separate and permanent. All of these emotions are products of our own minds, but we see the world or other people as making us angry or unhappy. And there's an old joke that kind of illustrates this of one person saying to another, "Why are you crying?" And the other person looks at him and says, "Because you're standing on my foot." So that's, you know, just a very good example of being unaware of your own actions and how you're affecting the world.
当我们感到受到威胁，但又无能为力的时候呢，我们就会感到恐惧。当我们感到威胁，而且我们又能够做什么的时候，我们就会感到愤怒。而讨厌啊，憎恨啊，或许是一种，是或许是就是说，体验到觉察到这个世界，跟你所设想的有不同的地方，而且你又很讨厌这个不同，希望这个差异能够被去掉的时候的一种，比较原始的一种情绪的表现。而这往往呢，这种讨厌、憎恨，往往会使你的愤怒给你的愤怒加油，让你的愤怒变越来燃烧越大。当然，一些比较好的感受，一些比较欢喜舒服的感受，看上去好像是没有那么有威胁性，但是它也有自己的一些后果，会让我们更加想要抓取这个虚假的存在的自我。比如说，其实，比如说，我们都看不明白这些情绪的产生，其实完全是由我们的心自己造作出来的。但是我们却认为，这完全是由于别人所造成的，是别人让我们感到生气，让我们不开心。就好比，有一个笑话说，有人问你为什么哭，那个人说，因为你站在我的脚上。所以我们通常并不意识到自己的行为会造成什么样的影响。
So what happens if you use a metaphor of our mind being a container and thoughts being the content is that when we concentrate and get fixated and caught by the content of our thoughts, all of a sudden the content becomes the container. And an illustration of that, I read a novel recently by an author named Don DeLillo,and talks about a family that goes to a fast food restaurant and they order fried chicken and french fries and drinks and they eat it in their car. And the author notes that as they're eating it, the whole world shrinks down to what's in their fingers, right? Just the french fries, you know, and the chicken, gobble, gobble, gobble. Everything else disappears. And think about this as you, you know, if you think about sometimes when you go through the day, if you're reading the newspaper, you're talking to someone, or you're trying to fix something, all of a sudden the world shrinks down to what's right in front of you, and you just are unaware of everything else around you.
就打个比喻说，我们的心其实就像一个容器，而我们的念头呢，就像是这个容器当中的东西。所以你如果把你的念头当成了自己，当成了真心的话，那么你就相当于把这个容器当中东西本身当成了容器一样。比如说有一个故事，我最近看到一个故事说，有一家人他们去吃这个快餐，然后点了薯条，他们在吃的时候，因为他们很认真很专注的在吃，他们的世界，这个电影显示的这个他们的世界就立刻缩小到他们当下的在吃的薯条了，所以对他们而言，周围的东西，周围的世界好像都不存在一样，所存在的就是眼前的这些薯条，正在吃的薯条。所以我想我们也会有这样的现实的生活当中体验，如果你正在专注的做眼前的事情，或者跟一个人在聊天的话，好像如果你没有注意到周围的 世界的话，周围的世界就好像不存在一样，而只有你眼前的这些人和事是存在的。
So why is it so hard to see what we see? Why is it so hard to be aware of the world in a more dynamic way and not continually get caught up in our perceptions? There's another Western novel called Catch 22, where this dilemma is sort of portrayed in a pretty humorous way. There's a character, his name is Orr, and he's talking about another character named Appleby, and he says that Appleby has flies in his eyes. And Appleby says, I don't see the flies in my eyes. And Orr says to him, you don't see flies in your eyes because there are flies in your eyes. There's, you know, the problem is so obvious that he's absolutely blind to it.
另外一个著名的小说叫《第二十条军规》，第二十二条军规当中呢，也讲到这样一个故事，是说，其中有一个角色正在和另一个角色谈话，那个Orr跟那个 Appleby 在说，他说你的眼睛里边有只虫，然后那个人说，他说我没有看到我眼睛里有虫啊，然后另外一个人说，就是因为你眼睛里有虫，所以你看不到你自己的眼睛有虫啊，这就是他们的对话，就显示出了一种无明的一个困境。
All right, so we have these problems of fear and anger, and now the question is like, really, what can we do with them? How do we work with these things? And as I come to the conclusion, there's this sort of two areas that we can use. One is analysis, and the other is transformation.
既然我们清楚到我们有这样一种妄念，而且很容易把这种妄念当作自己，那么我们如何来处理呢？我们有两种方法，一种是通过分析法，还有一种是通过转化法。
So in analysis, we can work with what's pretty apparent to us in our minds. We can watch what's going on. We can see what is arising, and we can become more discerning in how we observe ourselves. And there is this concept in Western chemistry of titration, where you're using one known quantity to figure out what another quantity is. And our known quantity in this metaphor is our mindfulness, and the unknown quantity is whatever is arising in our minds. Another way that this is often described, there's an author named Malcolm Gladwell who wrote a book called The Tipping Point. And The Tipping Point is this crucial point when all of a sudden you recognize, oh, I was sort of sitting there and I was calm, and now somebody called me and now I'm really angry, and you catch yourself.
第一种方式是一种分析法，就是说我们能够观察、体会到，能够观察自己时时刻刻升起的妄念，能够看到自己所起的分别心，可以观察自己，就相当于化学当中的用一种滴定的方法。滴定的方法就是用一种确定的数量去用确定数量的化学物质去测定不确定的另外一种不确定量的化学物质，就这个确定的量就相当于我们的打坐的方法，然后不确定的就相当于时时刻刻会在我们脑海中冒出的念头一样，又好比就像是一个突破点或转折点，就好像有一个人突然在那边本来他挺好的，然后突然被一个电话激怒了之类的。
So in terms of this discernment, let's just say you're driving on the highway and you stop in a service area and you get coffee from Dunkin' Donuts. You might take a couple sugars for your coffee, which is fine. Now some people might take 5 or 10 sugars, right? Now you might just take two sugars and you put two in your pocket because you know you're going to have coffee sometime later. Now is that, are you going to get arrested for taking two extra sugars? I don't think so. But if you look under the cabinet where they're serving the coffee and there's a wrap package that has 1,000 sugars in it, and if you take that, then that's probably stealing. So this idea of titration, watching when does your behavior change from something fairly ordinary to something that's really being influenced by something negative, is something that we can really watch.
再举一个这种转折点临界点的一个例子，就是说比如说你在加油站看到加油站加油的时候，你可能会顺带买一杯咖啡，然后你就在咖啡那边往咖啡里加糖。那么你到底拿几包呢？你可能拿两包，也可能拿五包、十包。有些人甚至可能会藏两包到口袋里边，因为他可能想待会儿我可能需要加两包。但是你说呢，他拿了那两包算不算是盗窃呢？可能不算，因为只有两包。但是如果他把整个一箱子的糖都带走了，那可能一箱子有1000包左右，那么在那个情况下，那可能就成为盗窃了。所以我们在观察自己情绪的起起伏伏，念头起起伏伏的时候，也在观察自己一种临界点，就是从什么时刻开始，它是从一个正常的反应到一个不正常的反应。
So indeed, there's a famous Western work of philosophy by Aristotle called the Nicomachean Ethics that talks about this issue of recognizing your behavior. And the Dalai Lama often says, very succinctly, just says, be a good person, which is not so easily done. But that's what's behind, let's say, Aristotle, who's looking at various virtues, qualities that we might have, and self-examining. And this is also something you find in Confucius, right? Confucius often says, you know, when I see somebody better than me, I try to emulate him. This is right in the first book of Confucius. And when I see someone worse than me, I look at myself. Right, so there's this is something embedded in Chinese culture, a kind of self-examination.
就相当于就好比西方的希腊哲学家亚里士多德在尼马可伦理学当中提到的一些如何来自我审查的一些方法，如何能够获得最终的幸福。这也相当于达赖喇嘛曾经不停地告诉大家要做一个好人，听上去好像是老调重弹，但实际上有很深的含义在里边。他要求大家能够不断通过不断自省的方法来够达到作为一个好人来发展一些美德。而这个其实和孔子和中国孔子的理论想法也是很一致的。孔子也要求大家要每日三省吾身这样。
So in Aristotle's Ethics, he talks about how various virtues can be destroyed, can be compromised by either excess or deficiency. So he talks about, let's say there's a virtue of courage. The deficiency is cowardice, and the excess is brashness, foolhardiness. And if you were to take another metaphor of this, of let's say clear inquiry being a virtue, being awareness. So the deficiency would be muddled thinking, and the excess would be rigid thinking, you know, not seeing the whole picture, just being too narrow-minded. And this, of course, is also, I think, is in the spirit of Buddha Dharma, of the middle way, of really recognizing where you are and how you're acting.
就像亚里士多德提倡的，比如说勇气是一种可贵的美德，优秀品质的话，那么这种美德也有可能因为也会可能被过多或者过少而抵触而销毁。比如说如果拥有过少的这样的 品质，过少的勇气的品质，那么它就会变成一种懦弱。如果这种勇气的品质太多的话，过头的话，那可能变成了莽撞、蛮干之类。那就相当，那换，再举一个例子，就比如说我们的心的清晰程度，我们心的清澈程度，如果说心很清晰明了，是一个很纯粹的品质的话，那么如果过少，这种品质过少的话，就会导致一个人很昏昧，而如果过多的话，就会导致一个人变得非常的矮板僵硬。
So continuing on analyzing what these emotions are, there was a 5th century Theravadan scholar named Buddhaghosa, and he wrote, "My friend is angry with a particular man. Tell me, what is it you are angry with? Are you angry with the hair on his head? Or are you angry with his body or his nails? Or are you angry with the earth element in his hair or any other part of him? Or are you angry with the water, fire, or wind element? What is meant by this person? He is only the 5 aggregates, right, the 5 skandhas, the 6 sense organs, the 6 sense objects, the 6 sense consciousnesses. With which of these are you angry? Is it with the aggregate of form, or is it with sensation, perception, volition, or consciousness? Or are you angry with a particular sense organ or object or sense consciousness?" And so Buddhaghosa says, "For a person who has made the above analysis, there is no hold for any anger, any more than there is for a grain of mustard seed on the point of an awl or a painting in the sky."
公元五世纪时的印度佛教僧侣觉英曾经说到，他说，我的朋友正在跟一个人生气，那么请告诉我，你到底是跟什么在生气呢？你是跟那个人的头发，头上头发在生气，还是跟他的身体在生气，还是跟他的指甲在生气，你还是你在跟组成他身体的地水火风当中的某个元素在生气呢？还是你跟他的五蕴在生气，就是所谓的受想行识这个五蕴在生气，还是你在跟某一个特定的六根或者六识在生气呢？如果他说，如果一个人能够做以上这些分析的话呢，那么他就不会生气，他对生气的感受可能就相当于在一个广阔的天空当中，一只老鹰嘴上的一个荠菜籽这么小的一个东西。
So on a flight back from England recently, there was a screaming baby on the plane. It was inconsolable. So I'm just like anybody else. I found it very annoying. But then I just thought about it, analyzed the situation, realized that the baby couldn't be screaming on the plane if that plane hadn't been built and if the airline hadn't bought the plane. So I could be angry at the airline, right? I could also be angry at the pilot for getting a license flying the plane that had the baby on it. And I could be angry at the Wright brothers for inventing aviation.
最近呢，我从英国回来的飞机上呢，有一个哭闹的小孩非常的吵，当然我和其他人一样也感到非常讨厌，被这种哭闹声感到起了烦恼心，感到很讨厌。然后那个时候我就在想，我就在分析，他说就是在想，我到底是在讨厌什么呢？我是不是也在讨厌这个航空公司造了这架飞机？如果不造这架飞机，可能就不会有这件事情啊。我还是在讨厌飞行员，因为他考了飞行执照，所以他可以驾驶这架载有哭闹小孩的飞机。还是我更甚至于我是在讨厌这个莱特兄弟发明了飞机这回事情。
So just to make this not quite as easy as to say, well, you know, fine, we can just abandon anger. There's another quote from Aristotle, where he says, "Anyone can become angry. That is easy. But to be angry with the right person at the right time, for the right purpose and the right way, that is not within everyone's power. And that is not easy." So I mean, is anger something that is just to be avoided at all costs? Maybe not. I remember once Master Shangyan Sherfu getting angry at a monk early on when I was here at the center, who overslept and had a fit because they overslept, and Sherfu yelled at him. But it doesn't mean he was angry, but it meant that his approach was necessary at the moment to control the situation.
再举亚里士多德的说的一句名言，他说任何人都会发怒，那是容易的，但是对适当的人以适当的程序以适当的程度，在适当的时候为适当的目的并以适当的方式发怒，那不是人人都能做到的，而且不是易事。所以说我们是不是要以不惜一切代价 去避免生气，去避免发怒不一定是这样的。就好像有一次我看到师父在骂一个他弟子，因为那个弟子睡过了。
Another story about anger. Once a woman traveling on a train met a guru in Hindu religion and kept plying him with questions about whether he was enlightened or whether he could do this or what his powers were. And finally he got angry at her and said,Why are you asking me these questions? Why don't you just leave me alone? And she said, oh, well, I thought you were a guru. How come you're getting angry? So he told the following story. There was a village in India that was plagued by a great serpent, a great snake. It was biting and killing a lot of the villagers. So the villagers approached a shaman in the local area who had great supernatural powers.And they said to him, you've got to help us with this snake. He's biting us. And the shaman went to see the snake and scolded the snake. That's a nice image right there. I wish I could do that. But he scolded the snake, and the snake listened to him and stopped attacking all the villagers. And then the villagers realized this. So they started pelting the snake with stones and insulting the snake, and the snake couldn't do anything about it.So the snake went to the shaman and complained, so the tables were turned. And the shaman looked at the snake. He said, I said you couldn't bite anyone. I didn't say you couldn't hiss. Mm-hmm. Right. So it doesn't mean, there are ways of confronting situations, and you can do them in ways that are appropriate, but it doesn't necessarily have to be,something that is blind anger.
再举一个故事来说，就是说有曾经有一个故事，是有一个妇女，她在一列火车上碰到了一个像印度教的宗教领袖一样的人，她就围着这个人问这问那，把那个人问烦了，然后那个人就说，你怎么这么烦，问我这么多问题，难道你就不能让我安静一下吗？然后那个妇女就说，她说你不是宗教领袖吗？你应该已经开悟了，应该不会生气才对啊。然后那个精神领袖就给她讲了一个故事，她说曾经在一个村落有毒蛇泛滥，然后那个毒蛇到处出去咬人，后来那个村落的人没有办法了，就请了一个当地的能够跟蛇交流的一个宗教领袖，跟她说，你跟蛇说不能再咬我们了。然后那个人就去跟蛇交涉，跟蛇说你不能再咬他们，然后蛇就同意了。然后之后村民知道蛇不再咬他们了，他们就用各种方式来就来攻击蛇，用石头砸它呀之类。后来蛇受不了了，毒蛇又跑到那个宗教领袖那边，他说你看大家都来打我，我已经受不了了。然后那个宗教领袖就说他说我跟你说你不要咬他们，并没有阻止你做出这种滋滋滋恐怖想要咬人的姿势呀。
So now starting to move towards the idea of transforming anger and hatred, just to get some perspective on what its role is in our lives and how we might view it. Here is something that Alexander Solzhenitsyn, Russian author, wrote. He said, if only it were all so simple, If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessarily only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. And who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart?
刚刚这个故事的结尾就是说，他告诉我们的道理就是说，适当的，就像亚里士多德所说的，适当的时候，适当的以显现生气和发怒是可以的，不可以的，我们想要去除的是没有任何不受任何自己控制的那种发怒情绪是要去除的。接下来我们会谈到第二步是如何转化情绪。有一位俄国的作家就讲到，他说如果这个世界的人都是那么的简单，如果这个世界有纯粹的坏人在干纯粹的坏事，我们又可以把坏人跟好人能够区分开来的话，那么这个世界就好了，就很简，就处理起来就很简单了。很可惜的是，所有的人都是有好有坏，而没有人愿意去真正的探究一下，看一下自己内心的好与坏，谁也不愿意来惊扰这种自己内心的平静，因为每个人都是有好有坏。
So Thich Nhat Hanh points out that negative feelings are part of who we are, just as Solzhenitsyn said. And he also points out that if you yell at your spouse or your son or a parent or whatever, you're really yelling at yourself. You have to own the fact that this feeling is coming from you. Other people don't necessarily make you feel the way that you feel.And so he then looks at these negative feelings that we have in us, and rather than pushing them away, right, we want to work with this. And of course, in Tibetan practice, there's a real sense that of negative emotions have an energy that can be tapped and can be turned, you know, like turning the dark side of the force into the good side of the force.
一行禅师曾经说过，他说负面情绪呢，其实是我们每个人都有的。像如果你在家里跟你的小孩啊，你的伴侣或者你的父母发脾气的时候，其实你是在对自己发脾气。所以正确态度是应该正视这些负面情绪，而不是去压抑它或者去去除它。比如说在藏传佛教当中，他们会认为负面情绪它也有很大的能量，而会想要致力于人如何把这种负面能量转化为正面的能量。
Thich Nhat Hanh goes on to say that when you have this negative feeling, this anger, or fear, he says you look at it like it's a little baby.And you look at it, you cradle it, and you say, little anger, little fear, don't be afraid. I will care for you. Because it is you, right? These feelings. So you don't want to be angry at your anger. You don't want to be fearful of your fear. You want to be able to process them, to look at them straight in the face, to use Sherfu's formula face it, recognize it, deal with it, and let it go. But you can't do that unless you can relax and look deeply into the eyes of that which is making you fearful or angry. And those eyes are your own eyes.
就像越南的一行禅师说到的，对峙生气啊，我不能对自己的生气而生气，而是应该正视它，就像哄一个婴儿一样，应该是很有耐心的，能够关注它，而不是对它采取比较粗暴的行为。就像师父说的，要面对它，接受它，放下处理它，放下它，就是在面对生气的情绪的时候，我们要放松，然后能够正视，然后再来处理。
So continuing, it says that the anger and fear, he gives this metaphor of it's like a potato. When you have this inside you, it's like you're cooking a potato. And of course, if you act on the fear or act on the anger in a mindless way, of course, that's not great. But if it is inside you, your mindfulness, your contemplation, your understanding cooks the potato, makes it tender, makes it soft, makes it less less volatile, less toxic, and shows that you can really work with these negative emotions, and they really can be detoxified, they can be understood, and they can be transformed.
就好比在用热水煮土豆一样，如果说土豆这是你的生气、烦恼这样一个很大的烦恼心的话，那么你所做的就是用修行，用打坐的功夫啊，还有平时持戒修行的功夫，能够让这个土豆慢慢的软化，能够让它不至于威力这么大。所以我们要能够与自己生气等等负面情绪共存，然后慢慢来处理它。
And as I draw to a close, one of the things, probably one of the most important points I want to make is that we really have to understand that we are not our problems. We feel that we're often described by what we're afraid of, what makes us angry. But once again, in Chan teaching, we know that we have a true mind, a mind that is aware of everything that is happening, but it's a mind that does not have to be caught up in it. And as a way of closing, I want to read a short paragraph by a columnist in the San Francisco Guardian named Mark Morford. And just to give a perspective about being in the world, working in the world, and not getting so caught up in the negativity. So he wrote, "Stop thinking this is all there is. Realize that for every ongoing war and religious outrage and environmental devastation and bogus Iraqi attack, that there are 1,000 counterbalancing acts of staggering generosity and humanity and art and beauty happening all over the world, right now, on a breathtaking scale, from flower box to cathedral. Resist the temptation to drown in fatalism, to shake your head and sigh and just throw in the karmic towel. Realize that this is the perfect moment to envision the re-enchantment of the world, to change the energy, to step right up and crank your personal volume. Right when it all seems dark and bitter and offensive and acrimonious and conflicted and bilious, there's your opening, right, at the darkest point. So after all, it is your intention that sends the energy into play." Very important concept in Chan, your intention. "And that directly affects the world, every single person and every single soul. And your hate and fear and self-righteous belief does nothing for yourself or for the country or for the entire planet. So remember mystery and magic, and finally believe in the seeds you plant. You are a part of a groundswell, a resistance, a seemingly small but actually very, very large impending karmic transformation, a great shift, the beginning of something important and potent and unstoppable."
Sure.
就像接近尾声的时候，我想再提醒的就是说，禅宗当中我们的真心能够感受这个世界，然后我们不要被现象和一些所困扰住我们的真心。最后结语的时候，我想引用一段旧金山卫报上有一个作者写的一段话。这段话内容我大致翻译一下，就是说我们不要认为，因为我们看到新闻报道大部分都是负面的，比如说战争啊、宗教冲突啊、环境恶化呀，还有伊拉克战争之类的各种各样的黑暗的事件在发生。我们不要只认为这个世界只有这些，因为在这些黑暗的时刻的同时，也有很多的光明的事情、好的、善意的东西正在发生。 此时此刻呢，也有很多发自于人类的，比如说宽容啊，人性的美丽的东西正在世界各地闪耀着，从各个教堂啊献上的花呀之类。所以说，对于我们自己而言，在这个黑暗的时刻，最重要的是我们自己的发心，我们向这个世界所散发的能量也是不是正向的。就像我们要种下一颗种子，并且相信这个神奇的种子在一定的时刻会发芽。所以在黑暗的时刻还是要关注于自己，自己其实就是这世界的一部分，能够给这个世界传播正能量。
Okay, so thank you very much. And
今天讲座就到这里。